Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest just played Lincoln Hall in Chicago's Give It Up for the UK singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Dan Kroll. That's the track Bad Boy, which is getting great support on iTunes, being added to the Breaking Alternative playlist, which is kind of like being in heavy rotation on WXRT back in the day.
Amazing.
Dan Kroll is getting the success he deserves. 27, you still 27?
I am,
should have checked that, right?
Yeah.
27-year-old singer-songwriter just put out a new album, Emerging Adulthood. It's the highly anticipated follow-up to his album, Sweet Disarray, which featured the track From Nowhere, which climbed the UK charts back in 2014. Dan Kroll is one of my favorite new artists, namely because he knows how to write a song that combines great melody, great music, and a little bit of message. Dan Kroll, welcome to the Download.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's just great to see you, man, and to have
intro.
You here in Chicago. How often do you get through Chicago? I mean, you've been touring a lot, so...
Ooh, this is, I think, fifth time playing Chicago. We played our first ever show in Chicago. It was the first ever time we'd been in the States was Chicago. And we had... Actually, it was very memorable because we just played Schubert's Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
We'd come off stage, and whilst we were on stage, a snowstorm had hit and it grounded all flights, and so we couldn't fly to Minneapolis. And because I didn't want to cancel my second ever show, which was in Minneapolis the next night, I decided to rent a van and drive through the snowstorm to Minneapolis through the night. And it was...
Did it work?
The craziest experience I've ever had.
That's a terrifying drive, and that's a terrifying drive
in
the snow.
It was, man.
Yeah.
It was. Only two of us could drive at that point. And so we just had to take, like, I don't know, it took us about 6-7 hours each. And it was horrible. Wow. We got in there in time at about 2 p.m. for a live radio session the next day. And we were just tired, but... Thankfully,
great
we haven't
memories.
Had to do that again. Yeah.
Well, you have such a great story when it comes to music because you kind of got into it at a relatively late age. You had sights on being a rugby star, doing something else with your life. Talk about that. Talk about beginning your musical career.
Yeah, it was late. You know, you meet a lot of people, or at least I meet a lot of musicians who are like, you know, I wrote my first song when I was 4 and I released an album when I was 8. And you're like, oh, great for you. I didn't. I was 17, 18 when I decided to pursue music. And that came after, my rugby career came to a very abrupt and painful end. With a broken leg, and because when I had this really bad break, I couldn't actually climb the stairs or any stairs, especially in my house, to get up to my bedroom or anything like that. And so we moved my bedroom down to like the kind of ground floor, the dining room, and in that room was like my sister's piano and my mum's record collection and stuff. And so I, you know, was suddenly kind of surrounded by a lot of music. There was a guitar in there as well, and just having the computer to just kind of browse as well. And so I just started kind of picking up instruments a bit, you know, reading my sister's kind of piano books. They were quite early on, and so I could pick it up and listening to all of these great records that my mum had in the house. And then it kind of dawned on me that these people were making a living. They were traveling and they were full-time musicians. And that never entered my head. I'd always listened to music as this kind of intangible thing, artists that were just kind of, I don't know, magical in a way. Like, I don't know how they did that. But it suddenly became a lot more accessible. And then on a bit of a whim, I decided to apply for a music university and then ended up in Liverpool, which was kind of like my second home anyway. And I'm still there.
Let's talk about Liverpool because we know, of course, in the States, we know Liverpool because of the Beatles. Mm. But talk about that music scene in that town because it does produce a lot of music. It produces a lot of bands. What is it about Liverpool and being there as a young, starting out musician that formed you?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it well, not only these two things, but I think they play a big factor in it. And I think it's the price of being able to live in Liverpool is very cheap. And so you can, you know, you can work a job a couple of times a week, but then you've still got a lot of time to do music and or be creative, which, you know, if you move to somewhere like London, you will never get that chance. You're lucky one night to be able to be creative. And so a lot of people tend to stay up in Liverpool because they can just kind of live cheap. And the fact that the city is so small, you can walk from one side of the city to the other in half an hour. That's it.
But
and
it's
so
got
it's
such
so
a,
small and so
it's
so
got
contained.
Such a rich history to it, but it's a city that has a great connection to rock and roll. Even in your case, I read that you lived above a bordello for a while.
Yeah,
I mean,
there
is a underground counterculture.
Massively, and it overlaps, and that's the main thing, and that's because of the size of the city. It overlaps. It's not like different boroughs of scenes and music. It is very much one small city with a lot of people doing a lot of different stuff, and you can't help but be influenced by those people. And so, like you say, you kind of have the, you know, classic songwriting of the Beatles. You've got like the kind of rock side of it, and like with the choral, and you've kind of got this, we've got a lot of kind of psychedelia there as well. And so all of that starts combining, and recently we've had a lot of pop and indie. We've got like Cirque Waves in there, and it's just a kind of this amalgamation of genres. You know, everyone's trying something else. Everyone's collaborating. So it's a very healthy
Sounds
place
like
to
your
be.
Music. Yeah.
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. Liverpool has massively shaped my music. It kind of birthed it, I guess, you know, in Stoke, where I was originally from. I really wasn't really doing anything. And the only people from Stoke are kind of Robbie Williams and Lemmy. But Lemmy didn't stay that long, you know. But So Liverpool, you know,
well,
it's fantastic.
I read somewhere that you consider your music pop music, but you really are making a concentrated effort to approach it from a different angle, to try and do something different. And I think you can hear that in the music, and you can also hear it because of the crossing over in the genres and the music that you put together. How do you approach pop music, the music that you're creating?
In a way, I don't really know, because I just make the music, you know. I've got to enjoy it, and so I'm just doing whatever I enjoy. But I guess there is this kind of subconscious feeling, like you say, that I've got to do it differently to what's already out there. And I think that's because I want it to be a bit more kind of honest and organic than what maybe is in the kind of top 10 of like the kind of charts, especially in the UK. You know, there's about 9 ghostwriters in a room, and it's all kind of electronically done. There's not real instruments on there even. And so for me, I want to, you know, it is my goal to compete with these artists. I want to be a commercial pop artist. But at the same time, I want to come at it from a slightly alternative angle and maybe give listeners something a little bit different to what is being offered in those kind of top 10s, top 20s. And I think, yeah, that comes from the kind of influences of like those kind of alternative.
You know, it's interesting because in the U.S., the top 10s, the top 20s, I mean, the same kind of experience. You have bands that are much more electronic now that are taking over at the pop music that gets played on the radio here. In the U.K., when you say there's 9 or 10 ghostwriters, I mean, is there a certain style of music that's coming out of London right now that's just dominating everything?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, and this is why I love being over in America, because the kind of whole radio system is so open. It's brilliant. And so I guess when I say top 10s, top 20s, actually you've got about a million top 10s, top 20s of different genres and stuff like that. Whereas in the UK, we have the BBC and we have Radio 1 and Radio 2 and Radio 3. Right. And it kind of, that's it in a way. There's a couple more. But so we kind of share this top 10, top 20. And so there's all kinds in there, in those charts. And I guess it's just, you know, it's just pop. There's so much pop in there. And occasionally you might get like a kind of indie band in there or someone doing something. But generally it is a kind of conveyor belt feel.
From my point of view, and this obviously
is personal to me, I do feel like it is that kind of conveyor belt of grabbing a young artist, kind of putting them in a studio with a bunch of writers, you know, who are kind of only really there just to grab a few kind of royalties here and there. And everyone's just kind of writing for that big hit, and that's cool. But then, you know, it's sad that the album dies out because of that kind of thing.
It's interesting, too, for the limited time that I've been overseas and in London or Scotland or anywhere in the area, the music that will be a top 10 or a pop music, it's not necessarily a crossover song from an artist that Americans would even know. It's these artists that will do these really bubblegum-type songs that are played in the clubs and
massively,
whatever, that you never hear about in the States. It's not your Ellie Goulding's or your, blanking on the kid's name, who does the Shape of You. Ed Sheeran.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
I just turned into a dad real quick right there. I'm so sorry. But it feels like there is almost this category that American audiences never get.
Yeah, I guess it's strange. I don't know what it is. You know, there are artists that are doing it. They're writing their songs and stuff like that, and they occasionally break through. But it's tough. You know, we have these kinds of introducing radio stations and stuff like that. But the percentage of what really gets through that is kind of organic music, and you know, people who are really putting in the effort. You know, they're paying for studios with real instruments in, which costs way more than just a kind of guy in his room with beats on a laptop and stuff. You know, people who are really making the effort, and so I'm persistent to make that effort and, you know, try and at least claw my way in there, you know, even if it's right at the back. You know, I just want to get in there because someone might just hear it and be introduced to something new from me, you know.
Yeah. Liverpool-based pop singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Dan Kroll in studio tonight. He was just in Chicago at Lincoln Hall, and he, of course, just put out a new album called Emerging Adulthood, which is getting great reviews. It's also the track Bad Boy is on iTunes. It's in playlists. It's in rotations. This was you recorded with Ben Allen in Atlanta, who's done Animal Collective, Deer Hunter, CeeLo Green at one point, Matt and Kim.
Yeah.
But you made the choice to get out of Liverpool and to do this album in the States, in Atlanta, with an indie rock producer as opposed to a pop producer. Why'd you make that choice?
Well, I think Ben actually offered both things. On one side, you have got the kind of real kind of indie left field kind of acts like Animal Collective and Deer Hunter, who I love. And I wanted that kind of rawness and that kind of drive from those guys, you know, that Ben brought. But then on the other hand, he's worked with like CeeLo Green, and I think he did some stuff with like A. Marie. And it's like suddenly he's got this, you know, he himself has got this poppy side and slight R&B kind of side to him. That's how he started. He was kind of, I think he was, his first intern job was in New York, and he's doing a lot of hip hop and R&B stuff. And so for me, that was like the kind of golden ratio, because that's what I want. You know, I want that kind of, I love pop. You know, I do I do enjoy kind of sugar-coated pop from time to time. And so I want a bit of that. You know, I want that foot in the commercial sector, I guess. And then on the other side, I want that kind of rawness and realness of bands like Deer Hunter and Animal Collective. Yeah. So for me, Ben was perfect. And it was just great that I got to kind of go to Atlanta to work with him.
When you get the chance to work with someone like Ben, talk about that relationship, because you get in there, there's producer, it's not necessarily the artist. In your case, you know, you're not just coming and saying, these are the tracks and this is how I want it to sound, press record. He plays a role in shaping what you're doing. Talk about that from the artist standpoint. How is that working with a producer pushing you?
Ben was really funny. Ben's a real kind of, he was almost quite British in the kind of dry humor, you know, part of it. And so we really got on. And, you know, we chatted, we Skyped before I even got to Atlanta. And so, you know, I kind of got to know him a little bit there. And so it was, you know, it was pretty smooth to just kind of go into the studio. But it's a different dynamic when you are doing it all yourself, like I was. You know, I'm not going in there with, you know, four other band members or anything like that. It is just me. And it is me all day, every day for 2 months, you know. And so you kind of got to really understand each other and know how to work with each other and alongside each other. And I think Ben did that perfectly. I think he really sussed on to the fact that I came from a sporting background. And he instantly knew how driven and how competitive I was. And he would use that against me in such a brilliant way that, like, he would just make up people. So I was playing all of the instruments on this album. And so, you know, if I was underperforming on one of these instruments, because I am not the best at each instrument, you know, I know bits and bobs of each one, and I drive and I compete with myself to understand these instruments better and get something good out of them. And Ben was brilliant, you know, especially sometimes when I was playing drums, if I was kind of underperforming, he'd just kind of come on the talkback system and he'd just be like, so I've got this friend, Derek. He's a roofer down the road. And I tell you what, he plays drums. He's really good. I reckon if I call him now, he can come down to the studio in about 10 minutes and he can knock this out of the park and we can go for tacos. And I'd be like, no, don't call him. Don't call him. And he'd keep getting me with it. You know, he'd keep being like, oh, I've got this friend. Yeah, Stacey. She's a great backing vocalist. She could hit those high notes. Yeah, yeah, she could get that. And I was like, no, don't call her. I can get this. And so he'd be really good. You know, it's you know, you need that kind of understanding of how people work, you know.
Emerging adulthood, and I mentioned this in the intro, but the idea that there is a little bit of a message. You are kind of going after a theme record when it comes to issues like self-confidence, mental health. There, you can feel like this idea of exploring some of the stereotypes of youth and this idea. Where does that come from? Where's the idea of really taking those issues of self-confidence, belief, mental health, those kind of things, and putting it to music?
For me, it all came from after the first album. I ended up getting dropped by my record label. I was with a big major label. I got dropped, and then I was left by my management as a kind of knock-on effect from that. And so after that first album, which I personally felt did so well.
It had a great single, too.
So I didn't have any expectations because I'd entered this kind of game so late. And so my expectations were just like getting it pressed. You know, that for me was mind-blowing to have an album pressed. And you know, the album charted, I think, at like 18 in the UK in the album charts, which for me was just mind-blowing. And obviously they wanted the kind of top 10. And so, you know, I was let go. And so for someone so new to this whole industry to be kind of suddenly signed and then suddenly dropped, it was really tough. And it hit a really tough 2 years of, you know, really lacking confidence and feeling very low and struggling with the kind of anxiety and trust issues. And so it really hit me all at once in those kind of 2 years after releasing that first album. And so, you know, once I decided that I actually wanted to do a second album, you know, I decided to write it in a very tight frame period so that it was all very fresh and it was all very cohesive and, you know, it kind of covered similar topics because that was what I was going through in that time period. And so, yeah, and I was just reading this book that really kind of helped me get through it, and it was great. And then, yeah, I guess it just kind of went from there.
Dan, we have a lot of musicians on the show, but I have to say that the album is wonderful. I think
it's
one of the best of the year. Emerging Adulthood is the name of the album. Dan Kroll is the artist, the Liverpool-based singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist. Was just in town at Lincoln Hall, but you can hear the song Bad Boy, which is on heavy rotation right now on iTunes, in the Breaking Alternative playlist. Which, again, I make the joke. It's like, for my generation, that's like getting played on Q101 in Chicago. You know, it's like just over and over and over. So, Dan, congratulations on your early success, and we look forward to more music.
Thanks so much.